Do you know what the secret is to keep a baby's skin healthy? The secret is a diaper that doesn't leave skin wet. You've heard me talk about Pampers Swaddlers on our podcast many, many times now, and that's because Pampers Swaddlers is the diaper for healthy baby skin. Pampers Swaddlers absorbs wetness better than the leading value brand and provides up to 100% leak-proof skin protection and up to 0% skin irritation. And if you're a fan of Pampers, you've got to check out their new Pampers Free and Gentle Wipes, which clean better than Huggies Natural Care and are 5 times stronger, so they resist tearing during a diaper change. With Free and Gentle, mess meets its match. And if you're like me and you love saving and getting rewarded for something you gotta buy anyway, like diapers, don't forget to download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. You can redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards. Try Swaddlers with new Pampers Free and Gentle Wipes for healthy baby skin. For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello, ABG listeners. It is Mel. Before we start today's episode, I want to share some very exciting news. ABG is turning 5 this September. 5 years old. That's so crazy. And we want to celebrate with you all in the city where it all started, Los Angeles. So if you're in the area, we'd love for you to join us for our happy hour social event on September 16th on Friday. Join us for a night of drinks themed after our episodes, our whole team, light bites, and a bunch of ABG listeners. Make new friends, say hi to us, take photos, and just join us to celebrate our 5th birthday. For more information, check our show notes. Can't wait to see you all there. Welcome to ABG, Asian Boss Girl, a podcast for the modern day Asian American woman. My name is Mel.
I'm Janet.
And I'm Helen.
Hello, ABG friends. I hope you're all doing well. Are you doing okay? Pause for answer. Cool. So the other day, we're at Helen's, and we were hanging out in the nursery, and I noticed something really interesting. I saw a sliced onion on the windowsill and was like, what? Like, shouldn't this be in a fridge or, like, in my sandwich? Helen then shared with us that it's actually a belief that her mom shared with her is that it kills germs and removes bacteria in the air, which we'll talk about later. Anyway, this got us talking about other practices, rituals, or superstitions that our parents take very seriously and ingrained in us while we were growing up.
Yes, so we tapped our wonderful contributing editor, Hemi, to help us identify a wide range of known myths or beliefs that are popular to certain Asian cultures, and help us do some research into whether these are actually true. We got quite curious and thought we would discuss and share our findings with you all today. And as you're listening, if any of these sound familiar or remind you of something you've heard growing up, drop us a note in the comments of the IG post for this episode. So the first myth or belief that we're going to talk about is about putting hot food in the fridge and how it actually makes the food go bad faster. Now, have you ladies heard of this? It's supposed to be a Korean, belief.
Ooh, I have heard of this one before, but I don't know the science behind it, if it is true. I'm going to say it has something to do with, like, shocking the hot food with a different temperature and it changing too quickly the molecular structure of the food to make it go bad. That's probably the best answer I can come up with. But my mom has definitely led by example and shown me that when soup is just boiled and hot, you got to, like, leave the pot till it's cool or warm before you stick it in the fridge. So there's always food left out for a little bit if it were too hot before going in the fridge, like, late in the night. I also know that for baby milk, you gradually warm up the milk rather than microwave or shock heat the milk because it destroys certain nutrients if it's heated at too high of a temperature. So I do believe this myth to be true for one reason or another, and curious to hear if it is. Mm. What do you think, Mel?
I never heard of this myth or belief. A couple of reasons. I realize in my household, we always pack our food like after we're done eating, and then we like kind of leave it out sitting on top of the lids. Because my brother eats round 2 for dinner. So by the time we're done eating the second round of dinner, it's already like at the right temperature to put in the fridge. So I never really experienced that until I lived by myself. This sounds really weird, but like, for example, like I do meal prep. So like the other day I made pasta sauce, and when I put the lid on top of the, like my container, it already like kind of expanded, and I was like, oh, that doesn't look good. So I just knew not to put it in the fridge. I'm afraid it's going to blow up or something. So never heard of this. I'm also probably the worst person to ask with this type of question, because this is kind of unrelated but related, but like I'm the type of person that, like, let's say the three of us go to lunch and I order like a hot food, I'll put it in the to-go box if I can't finish it. But if it's in the car and in the sun, I don't think that it's big of a deal, because I'm like, it's been hot before. So
girl, for how long? How long are you leaving your car for?
Yeah. I don't know, because I'm thinking, like, technically it's cooking like it was in the pan before.
Oh, maybe so good.
I used to think that, too. But then I think I looked it up one day, and it's like, it actually breeds bacteria if it's in the heat for too long in your car. So is that the reason why you have so many stomach aches?
That's possible. That, you know, I've seen a change. I haven't been leaving food in the car as much anymore, but I have done in the past. So just... trying to save myself here.
Yeah. So actually, talking about bacteria, that has to do with the answer that we found. According to All Recipes, there is actually a danger zone for bacterial growth. So if food is between 41 and 135 degrees Fahrenheit, this is the spectrum known as the danger zone, where potentially harmful bacteria grows most rapidly at these temperatures. So if you have a large amount of hot food, it'll help the food pass through this danger zone for bacterial growth faster if you divide it into smaller, shallow containers, or use an ice bath or cold water shower to help cool the foods down more quickly. So if you have a large pot or container of food that's hot, it should not be placed in the refrigerator or freezer, because it can actually raise the temperature inside the refrigerator or the freezer and have a high risk for spoiling the other food that's already in there. So that's kind of their thing. Although they do want to say that it is better if you have hot foods in like smaller containers, it's better to just store it in the fridge right away. If you're going to end up forgetting it outside, better to put it hot in the fridge than to leave it out and forget about it in room temperature for a really long time. But generally speaking, yes, if you... Oh, sorry. So does that mean that it's not supposed to... I'm getting a little confused. I'm like, well, because... So 41 degrees to 135, that's like if it...
Dude, I don't know how... Honestly, I've literally... That's this part I'm stuck on, because I'm just like... What is 41 degrees? Yeah. Like, have I touched 41 degrees before?
Yeah, like, I feel like that's...
Like when I cook my food, I don't... When I touch it and it's hot, I don't know how hot it is.
What's room temperature? Isn't that like 70 degrees?
70-something? Yeah. So bacteria can occur around... So it's like if it's hotter, then it's okay. And then if it's really cold, it's okay too. But there's like that danger zone in the middle. So I guess it's like...
Like room temp.
Yeah. So I guess actually then the danger of leaving or putting the fridge in the food is not so much spoiling the food that's hot and cooked as it is spoiling the other food in the fridge. So it sounds like if you made your meal prep, Mel, whether you leave it out or if you put it, or it's probably better to just put that food in the fridge so that food doesn't spoil. But then if you do that, it's going to spoil like the apple and the other stuff you have in the fridge or the other meat you have in the fridge.
But isn't that why you have like the little drawer that says like for fresh produce or something?
I guess so. But then maybe sometimes it won't be like effective enough.
But how much hot food can you put into your fridge before it actually lowers the temperature of the surrounding foods? Because your refrigerator is constantly keeping at a cool state.
Yeah. I guess maybe just try to avoid, like, don't put it right on top of the produce or... I don't know. Sometimes I think about that where I'm like, if I'm going to put food in the fridge, you know how like you have, there's like a bulb, like a light bulb in the fridge on the top shelf usually.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'm like, oh, I should avoid putting like things that'll spoil quickly up there because you know what I mean? And I sometimes wonder, I'm like, where in the fridge strategically should this item go?
But that light only turns on when you open the door.
It does, but think about how many times you open the door in a day, you know? And then sometimes people, like, when you're, like, in the morning when I'm making my smoothie, I sometimes just have the door open and I'm taking things in and out, you know?
Wait, Mel, did you know that? Because you had a very shocked look on your face.
I forgot about the light bulb, but that just made me think of something hella unrelated to this. Do you ever think it's interesting that when you touch the light bulb in the fridge, it doesn't hurt your fingers because it's cold?
Wow, I had not thought about that. but
because most true. Likely when you look at your light bulb like in the living room, like you don't want to touch it because it's gonna hurt your fingers, but you could touch the one in the fridge.
I feel like everyone's gonna go and touch the light bulb touch in their the light fridge bulb now. In the fridge.
Yeah. Wait, question, do you guys think they make a certain type of light bulb for their fridge? Because it, you know, like there's a difference.
That's a really good question, and now I'm curious and I'm sad that I have to wait till the end of this episode to go find out.
So I actually know, because in the last month, the place I'm leasing right now, the light bulb in the fridge went out. So I had to go online and Google and order a new one from Amazon. But they're actually just regular light bulbs. At least I hope they are. Otherwise, I bought the wrong one. But the only thing you have to pay attention to is like there's a max wattage. So I think it's like as long as any light bulb you get is at the level or less than that wattage, because you can't have like a super bright hot light bulb in a cold setting, I guess. Mm-hmm. So as long as it's like lower than whatever the wattage is on the bulb, it should be okay for the fridge.
Cool.
But anyway, we've deviated. Yeah, tangent. But I guess it's like this belief that putting hot fridge in the food makes it go faster. I guess we're finding is not necessarily really true. It's not true, but it can potentially spoil the other food in the fridge. That's
if any of the listeners have a better explanation or have experiences, please, you know,
let us know.
We obviously have no idea.
Well, basically, we're still debating. Basically, don't leave your food out for too long and don't put it in the fridge. Yes. Right away.
Right away. Yeah.
To affect the other food around it. But I feel like if you were to choose one or the other, it's better to put it in the fridge because your refrigerator is going to keep the food around it still cold. That's the conclusion.
Yes.
All right.
Moving on to the next belief. I feel like all these beliefs will end up in tangents. But anyways, the next belief, I think it's fairly popular within the like older generational like Asian culture, is like having no ice in your liquids, or they're sensitive to like, they like room temperature liquids. Like, I'll give you an example. I remember growing up, my grandma would always be like, she'll never give me ice water. Like, ice water was never given to me. We just always had room temperature water. Like, our Brita at home is never in the fridge.
Oh.
Growing up, an ice beverage is so refreshing. And I have a story about this because I feel like I told this story a couple times. I don't know if people remember, but my brother and my cousin, Christopher, and I, all of us were back in Taiwan, and we decided to stay with my grandma's sister. And it is freaking hot in Taiwan. It's like humidity. It's really hot. And then we're sleeping over, and my great aunt's like, do you guys want a smoothie? And we're like, yes, we'd love a smoothie. We were picturing like some Jamba Juice kind of like refreshing ice concoction. But she hands us this mushy cup, and it's all the fruit she had was like, I don't think she puts it in the fridge. Room temperature fruit, room temperature water, no ice. So it was like warm smoothie. And I was like, this is not what I anticipated. Mm. But I think it's because they don't like anything too cold. So I'm just curious as to like if you guys feel the same way or have experienced the same thing.
I definitely grew up with the same messaging. All of my Chinese relatives of my parents' generation and above, like, know about this and talk about this and reinforce this. And especially on my mom's side, I remember like whenever I'd go to my grandma or my aunt's house, they would actually like, yeah, I would be like reprimanded when I was younger if I ever like asked for ice water or whatever. Not that they like punished or whatever, but they would just always be like, oh my gosh, why? No, don't, like, you know, drink room temperature. And they emphasize, especially because I'm a girl, you know, and I didn't understand. I was like, oh, especially for women, why is that? But yeah, that was my experience. How about you, Helen?
I would also personally love to understand the why of this, because obviously all of us grew up with very Asian traditional parents who only drink warm water, never ice. Even now that my parents are visiting, I use my hot water boiler to quickly boil water to heat up bottles for my baby. But now that they're visiting, the boiler is always filled to the brim with water so that they can heat up water for whenever they need it. And I always feel guilty because I pour out like 2/3 of the water so that I can quickly heat up the little liquid that I need to heat up a bottle. And I'm just like, can you stop using this? But also, you need this. But I need this every like 4 hours. So do we need another boiler just for you and then just for me? But I feel like this one has to be true because so many elder Asian parents abide by this. So please tell me if this is debunkable or not, so we can go back to them and be like, drink this ice water.
Well, I will be here to share this information I found from Hemi. So water, I'm a water scientist, this is really fun. So water in Chinese medicine, and Janet, you studied this, so maybe this rings a bell, but everything is classified according to more yin or more yang, so more cold or more heat. The aim is to always strive for balance of the two. So water is considered a yin substance, i.e. a cooling substance. That's why we need to make it a bit more yang by adding heat. So by default, water is considered cool. So that's why they want to raise the temperature. Interesting. Here's the why we should love. Continuous consumption of cold water will actually put out our stomach fire. Ooh. My stomach's always on fire. That makes sense. My stomach's on fire.
No, your stomach's always on fire.
I know. I would ask my mom, like, why is our stomach always on fire? What will then happen is that our body's digestive system has to work harder in order to heat up enough to aid the digestive fire. So this forces the digestive system to essentially borrow energy from other systems in the body. So systems like a reproductive system, for example. This can then deplete the reproductive system of its energy, called qi in Chinese medicine. When our stomach fire is put out, this leads to slower digestion, malabsorption.
Malabsorption.
Malabsorption. Should we just take that back or leave that in?
Let's leave that in. That was amazing.
Bloating.
That should be the episode clip.
Say it again.
Malabsorption.
Perfect. Bloating, gas, weight gain, and stomach pain that gets better with warmth. Honestly, this makes a lot of sense now. And I've shared with you both that my family likes to eat, like, spicy, and like my mom and I like to drink iced beverages. But we always have problems with our digestion system and bloating. So I think now with, like, I try to implement more warm liquids into my body. But that is the why. It makes a lot of sense.
Wow. I feel like slow digestion, malabsorption, bloating, get all of that. That's a lot of stuff to worry about from cold water alone. And maybe this is more Western thinking, but I remember reading somewhere that when you drink cold water, your body works harder to heat it back up, which I guess is consistent with what you mentioned, Mel, from more of a TCM approach. But from a Western perspective, it was shared, I remember reading it, like, in a positive light, that if your body is working harder, you're burning more calories. I did look this up because I don't want to be the person that spreads gimmicks and any, like, get slim quick shit that usually is bullshit anyway, but it's been found that the difference between drinking hot and cold water in terms of burning calories is minimal. The body might burn 4 extra calories, which I don't know if this is accurate, but, like, that's like a fart or a burp, right? Like, very minimal of a difference. And so it does make me wonder, given everything that you mentioned, Mel, from the Chinese medicine perspective, the digestion, bloating, gas, etc., maybe it is actually better to go hot than cold for those 4 calories.
Yeah. I have a follow-up question for you both related to, like, consuming water or, like, whatever. Yeah. But I think growing up, depending on what, like, when I was back in Taiwan eating dinner, one thing I noticed is that, you know, when we eat meals together, we always have a beverage. Mm-hmm. When I was in Taiwan having dinner, I remember the kids weren't allowed to have drinks. So they would just want you to focus on eating, and then afterwards you can have a cup of whatever you want to drink.
Yeah, that was how my mom's side of the family was as well. They were always like, no, you don't want to, like, don't drink so much water while you're eating. And I don't know if they're like, it's mixing, like, you want the food to... I'm actually not sure why they did that, but I noticed that was a distinct difference as well, is like you eat food first, and then if you want, you're thirsty, drink it after versus doing it together.
Because I'm like thirsty.
Yeah, I have distinct memories of us wanting like a soda, and then I think it's more because it was extra cost. They're like, no, drink water. And so we never had soda at like Chinese banquets or anything. Not Chinese banquets, but like Chinese dinners where...
Oh, yeah.
People have, like, huge bottles of soda in the middle of their table. We never had huge bottles of soda.
I can relate to that. To this day, when I ever maybe spontaneously crave a fountain drink, I feel really bad when I order it. I'm just like, oh. Mm. Like, it's just I'm always like, water, because it's free.
Yeah.
Don't you find it interesting that the whole drinking warm water is kind of more of an Asian tradition? When you go to Asian restaurants, they always give you cold water.
Yeah. I think that because they were adapting to like American culture.
Western.
Yeah. Because I remember even distinctly, like, actually a lot of Asian restaurants, they just serve room temperature. They don't put ice in it. And then only, at least from my memory when I was younger, a lot of the restaurants we went to, they just give lukewarm. And then because we would ask for ice, like the kids would, then they started, like, you know, they would put in ice. But usually it's room temperature.
On this topic, I also know that during my postpartum recovery, which was administered by my mom, one of the biggest considerations given in my care was to avoid anything cold, including drinking cold liquids, because it is believed that after you give birth, your body is in a cold state, which happens after you lose your placenta and all the blood that leaves your body. So like you were mentioning earlier with the TCM thing, the chi balance, the chi is basically leaving your body, right? And so my mom really believed that walking barefoot, having my feet cold, having fans or air conditioning blowing directly on me was like the worst thing that could happen to me. Or even like walking outside and having a gust of wind like blow my eyelashes up or something. It's like, oh, I don't know why instead of hair I said eyelashes. Anyway, but I think having gone through that whole process myself, I did feel like I recovered fairly quickly after giving birth. And I did feel, I feel like good relative to other stories that I heard. And I really do think it did have to do with the confinement period that I went through. And potentially all the warm and hot liquids that I drank. So I am a total believer in this one, even though I have iced coffee and ice water next to me right now. But I am a believer of this one.
I want to share something that I'm really interesting about. Speaking of postpartum recovery, and Helen, I hope you don't mind me sharing. But I remember we were over at Helen's place. And keep in mind, like, I think you had the baby around December. So, I mean, LA cold. It was still, like, relatively, like, cold, quote unquote, outside. But for the longest time, Helen, we saw what she ate. Like, it was, like, boiled fish. It was soup almost every day, every meal. And I remember, of course, Helen is Asian American, and she's like, oh, I really want that watermelon. Like, I remember.
I really want that sushi. That's what I said.
I know. But I remember distinctly that your mom cut up fruit for the rest of us, and you couldn't eat it. And you're like, ugh. But then you snuck one piece. It was like a small piece of watermelon. And then literally an hour later, you're like, dude, look at my tongue. And it was like, bloated. It just like bumps on your tongue. You're like, holy shit, maybe this stuff does work.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that you put one item of cold, like one in food item in your mouth, you like saw the difference. And I was like, I remember I was like, whoa.
Yeah. It was weird. That was strange. I forgot about that. That is true. Because I hadn't had cold anything in a while. And then after I ate that, like, my tongue was like extra like red and like sensitive, and I was like, oh, what's happening? And I don't have any like food allergies or sensitivities, so that was the first time that kind of happened, and I was like, whoa, what's my body going through right now? What's happening? But it made me even more of a believer in all of that.
Same.
Do you know what the secret is to keep a baby's skin healthy? The secret is a diaper that doesn't leave skin wet. You've heard me talk about Pampers Swaddlers on our podcast many, many times now, and that's because Pampers Swaddlers is the diaper for healthy baby skin. Pampers Swaddlers absorbs wetness better than the leading value brand and provides up to 100% leak-proof skin protection and up to 0% skin irritation. And if you're a fan of Pampers, you've got to check out their new Pampers Free and Gentle Wipes, which clean better than Huggies Natural Care and are 5 times stronger, so they resist tearing during a diaper change. With Free and Gentle, mess meets its match. And if you're like me and you love saving and getting rewarded for something you gotta buy anyway, like diapers, don't forget to download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. You can redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards. Try Swaddlers with new Pampers Free and Gentle Wipes for healthy baby skin. For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
So the last belief brings me to a similar one that is also related to cold things. The belief is that it is imperative to wear slippers at home to keep the feet warm. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, if you say it like that, it's like, yeah, it makes sense. Like, when your feet are cold, you wear socks or you wear slippers, right? But I feel like this belief is saying that, like, the heat slips out of your feet. Kind of like you're saying your mom didn't want you without slippers. But for me, this is okay. This doesn't sound weird, but I have a distinct memory. Sophomore year, English lit class, my teacher would always talk about you have to wear a hat. The head is where the heat escapes from. But then I thought about, I was like, so it escapes from both ends pretty much. You say head and feet,
you
right?
Just put a hat on, put socks on, keep it all in the middle.
You're like a magnet. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm just like, okay, if it applies to your feet, it applies to your head. So it makes, so yeah, I don't know.
What do you think, Janet?
I do think that there is some truth to this. And Like when I was growing up, this definitely was something that my parents and all my family members very much had. We always had slippers that we provided to guests. And I remember when I was very young, we used to have slippers around the house, but we started to do it less because we would have a lot of our like friends and neighbors over that were around my age, and a lot of them were not Chinese. And so because they would come over, you know, they wouldn't really wear slippers. So slowly the habit kind of like became more loose with it. And in fact, a lot of my neighbors, they would be barefoot outside. Like when we go outside to play, like their parents would just let them, they would like run around. And I remember, you know, as a kid, you're like, I want to do what everyone else is doing, right? My parents refused. They're like, absolutely not. That's so like, you know, you're going to hurt yourself and it's dirty and you bring it into the house, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, whenever I would go and visit like my grandma's house or anyone on my mom's side, my aunts or uncles, they are always insistent that you wear slippers. In fact, when I would say, no, I don't need it, because I didn't want to like trouble them, they would be like, no, like they would almost be uncomfortable for you. Like, oh, you don't want slippers, you know? And so So I feel like there is something to the health of keeping your feet warm.
Actually, you know, it's interesting. This whole time I realized I thought we wore slippers. Like Helen gives us slippers too. I thought it's mostly because the floor is dirty.
Oh,
my floors, my dirty floors are clean.
My floor is questionable, and I do vacuum. Because I wear slippers in my house because I think sometimes the floor gets dusty. But right. I do Swift and I do vacuum. I want to put out there.
I mean, I think it is a huge cleanliness thing too, but it's interesting that even though we all have different, obviously, families and different upbringings, and our families are from different areas of China, Taiwan, like this is very consistent throughout all of our families. Anytime I enter in my grandma's house, even if she has like back pain or feet pain, or she always says she has headaches, she'll always still like find her way and shuffle across the room to grab me a pair of slippers so my feet aren't cold. I'm like, Grandma, sit down. I can grab it. She's like, no, you're not going to get it without me. I'm like, okay. So it is very, very important. And also for the amount of time that we do wear slippers in the home, these aren't like memory foam slippers with like arch support that you'd be getting if we were, you know, wearing slippers so often. They're like the $2.99 slippers you get in the corner market of some Chinatown with the hard, thin soles and the mesh with the flowers embroidered on top of it. I feel like you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? The mesh with like the little plastic mesh with the sparkly flowers on top.
Those are the fancy ones.
Those are, really?
The ones I used to wear in Taiwan, my uncle would be like, those are the prison slippers.
No, I know the ones Helen's talking about. I remember, I feel like those became like trendy for a while.
Oh, were they?
Like I saw a lot of people, but yeah, they were really pretty. Like the mesh, and they'd come in different colors.
Yeah, but they're so narrow. Like my mom's toe sticks out of them. It's like a one size fit all, y'all.
Yeah.
Wait, I gotta see this now.
My mom's gonna kill me. Why should that be the thumbnail for this episode?
Oh my god.
Like, even though I've bought her, because when she comes to visit, she like keeps those slippers and she hides it somewhere. And I don't know where she hides it because I never see it. And then when she comes back again, she like brings it out of some closet. I'm like, where the frick did you hide this? And I got her nicer slippers to use, but she's like, no, this is okay. This is okay. Like, that's too fancy. I'm like, dang, use it. Well, according to TCM beliefs, one of the main acupuncture points for the kidney channel is on the sole of your foot. Mm. And kidney energy facilitates fertility and needs to be warm to do so. So the temperature of your feet is supposedly related to the temperature of your womb. I wonder, Janet, if this is related to something you were saying earlier about how, specifically as a girl, it's necessary that you're not like drinking cold liquids and keeping your feet cold. So keeping your feet warm is supposedly keeps all of the energy meridians in your legs warm. And these meridians bring energy up to your uterus and entire pelvis area. So if your feet are cold, your uterus is cold. If your feet are warm, your uterus is warm. So I guess slippers help with fertility, supposedly. Mm. Also, having warm feet, supposedly, opens up the blood vessels in them to allow more efficient blood flow and to help your body to redistribute heat all around. In turn, this helps you to sleep better, bring back your energy, and generally take care of yourself to stay more comfortable, fit, and well.
Mm.
Aside from these points, I think it's also just a cleanliness thing. But lots of good support out there for keeping your feet warm.
So this brings us to our next belief, which is kind of, you know, we've been talking a lot about the like TCM approaches, Eastern versus Western kind of perspective on health. We want to discuss the belief about the effectiveness of using Eastern medical approaches versus like Western medical approaches. So, you know, all three of us grew up in the U.S. in American culture, but obviously our families are ethnically Chinese. And around the home, when you would get sick or, you know, maybe like have certain ailments, when you were growing up, did your parents use like certain home remedies that were kind of like different from, say, going to the pharmacy and getting like Tylenol or Advil or something like that?
I think my parents have been a believer in the typical over-the-counter medicines like Tylenol, Claritin, etc., but they're definitely big on daily intake of foods and hot water and nutritional items that are highly focused on your health and the balance of your body. Nothing that's too yeet hey, nothing too spicy or salty, just like overall good balance. And I think personally for me, like I mentioned earlier, after having gone through my postpartum confinement period, I very much am a believer that Eastern medicine probably has more benefits, ooh, that's a big statement, than Western, since it's less reactive and more holistic of an approach. And also, just surely because it's been around for so long, so much longer than Western medicine, there must be some, like, credibility given to that, right? I always think about how when we grew up as kids of Asian immigrants, we would always see things like acupuncture or having grown up seeing my mom with the cup bruises on her back since I was a child, both of which we now see with NFL players and other athletes doing this all the time. And that I feel like was not at all popularized until more recently, but it's been around for ages. So I do think that Eastern medicine has a lot of benefits to it, but the issue is that it's just not as well documented or easily searchable from a Westerner's eyes. Even for my confinement period, like, not a lot of information was out there, and I kept asking my mom, why? And she's just like, you just do it, blah, blah, blah. It's been passed down for, like, from my parents, from whoever, just believe in it. And it's so hard to just believe in, even though there are benefits to it that we can't see immediately. But I think we're going to see a lot more TCM practice in play in the coming years. That's my opinion.
That's very interesting. I feel like for me, like, I had more exposure to, like, the Eastern medicine through my grandma and maybe through, like, actually it's really through the postpartum, like, just being exposed to my aunt having her babies. Like, I was, like, always saw her, like, in our family. It's like, I do think that the Eastern approach is, like, eating certain types of foods, like, the whole, like, hot and cold is a big factor. And I can see how that, because I honestly don't know in the American culture, there's certain things you have to eat after pregnancy. I don't know. Like, I had never heard any of the, like, you should eat this or you should not eat this. So, I don't know. So, there's that. I feel like, in terms of food, my mom is notorious of eating, like, spicy, all the quote-unquote bad stuff, which I love. Like, the oils, the mala flavor, like. But I also saw the result of that because my digestion was really bad. So, I started turning into more, like, Eastern approaches, and I have personally seen a difference. A home remedy my grandma used to do with me, which is really interesting, is whenever I was sick, she'd always feed me this Chinese soda called Heisong, and it's a sarsaparilla. It's kind of like a Chinese root beer.
Heisong. I haven't heard of that.
It's like a dark red can, but I think it's because at first I was like, oh, this is a Chinese thing. But I realized a lot of other, even American families, sometimes when you're feeling like uncomfortable in the tummy, it's a carbonation helps. So she'll feed me that. So maybe for her, that's the soda she would give me because it's Chinese soda. Right. Another thing is I do believe in acupuncture. So my mom actually got me into acupuncture. My grandma did cupping too, but my mom, so the women in my family, we have a trend of having vertigo. So when I was in elementary school, I'd wake up sometimes so dizzy I couldn't walk straight. I would actually call out of class. Oh, wow. And my mom has it, my grandma has it. And so the thing that my mom tried was acupuncture, and she realized, the doctor said, yeah, we're opening up your blood flow and the pressure points, so that way you'll feel more balanced. And ever since my mom and I both did that, we have stopped getting vertigo, which is kind of crazy. So I think that is some moments of, like, Eastern medicine that I feel like I've been exposed to. Yeah. Do you have any for yourself, Janet?
Yeah. I mean, similarly for me, a lot of it came through my grandparents more strongly than my parents. I remember when I would be at my grandmother's house, if we would get a sore throat, she would give us this thing called cun pi pi pa gao.
Oh, I love that stuff.
Yeah. She would give us this kind of like black syrup. It's called like pipagao or twin pea pipagao. And it's this kind of like minty, sweet, darker brown, almost blackish like syrup. And I think in like American holistic natural medicine, it's kind of similar to like elderberry syrup. Mm. But basically, it's like it helps soothe. And they would give it for everything. Like, oh, you have a stomachache? Here, have a spoonful of this. Oh, you have a your throat sore? Here, have a spoonful of this. Headache? A spoonful of this. But essentially, it's a more gentle and natural and like less harsh than, say, taking like a Western pharmaceutical or a cough syrup. My mom also growing up, like, she's like a very active person, so she would constantly go and take like kickboxing and all these things. Wow. And she would get a lot of muscle soreness. But she was always wearing salompas. I don't know if anyone knows that, but you know, there are these like cloth strips with like kind of a minty product. So almost like hot and icy hot or whatever that in Western culture they have, but it's more mild and it comes on these cloth things and you just like stick it on your skin. And some of the more intense ones that you can find, actually, I think they use like animal blood, which is, I'm not sure what it, but there are ones that like essentially using cloth and then like a more sticky substance, and they put like herbs and different things mm-hmm. on it that you put on your skin and helps to heal. So I definitely grew up with my family usually turning to more natural approaches versus jumping right into kind of like more like Western approaches. And even with medication, my mom told me that, you know, things like Tylenol or cold meds, In the States, they do research based on Western people's bodies. And usually it's like Western, white, middle-aged men. So she said, you have to be careful for yourself. The dosage recommendation actually may be too high for you. You need to be observant and kind of try little by little for yourself. So yeah, it sounds like we all three of us kind of have, you know, been accustomed to being around using kind of Eastern approaches over Western sometimes. And when we did some research, what we found is that, you know, when it comes to the belief of the effectiveness of one over the other, it isn't like an all or nothing. Actually, both Eastern and Western medicine are effective. Obviously, that's why both have been around for a long time healing people. But they just have different kind of approaches. And oftentimes nowadays, especially, people call them complementary. They work well together. Mm-hmm. Eastern medicine generally focuses really a lot on prevention. And that's why it's like when things are happening before they get very severe, Eastern medicine is a good thing to reference. And they focus on prevention, on preservation, and on trying to address a problem by causing the least amount of harm. Mm-hmm. Right. So versus Western medicine tends to be very good when things get very acute and very serious. So if you break your arm, don't try to put a little bit of Tiger Balm on that. That's probably not going to help, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But if you maybe just, you know, you like a little bit of a muscle pain, you probably want to do Tiger Balm versus going to the doctor, to the emergency room or something. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the things that we found. And especially if we wanted to look specifically into the example of like using Tiger Balm to help with like irritation, there's definitely findings that you know, surface like Tiger Balm as like a muscle pain reliever for headaches, arthritis pain, cough, and cold decongestion, it does you know, work. And I know it feels like maybe muscle pain seems obvious, but it's like, why would you use Tiger Balm for a cold, you know? Mm-hmm. But there is research that finds that causing mild irritation to the skin actually distracts the brain from the sensation of pain. So thus, when you use something like a cool minty, something on the surface of your skin, it actually stimulates the sensory receptors on your skin and it dulls the pain receptors. So that might help us understand why maybe when you have a little bit of a headache or like a cold, like, why am I putting Tiger Balm on the skin? It doesn't seem like that would help. But, you know, if there's like mild irritation, sometimes it's a little bit of a distraction and that can also be effective.
That is very interesting. I didn't know about that. I thought there's a very great analogy that in our previous episode we did about TCM that I thought was a great example of what the difference of effectiveness of Eastern medicine versus Western. But it's kind of like you said, Jen, like how Eastern medicine is more preventative versus Western medicine more for like something very serious. But when we talked to the TCM doctor, she said, imagine your body is this pool, right? And there's like a cancer, there's like a disease there. What Western medicine does is targets that like cancer or that cell in your body. Eastern medicine focuses on the surrounding to prevent that from happening. So I thought that was really interesting. And I always think about that when I compare the difference.
That's a great analogy. Yeah.
The next belief I've heard a lot growing up is that shaving baby's hair to make the hair grow back thicker. My grandma believed in this because, I don't know if she shaved my head, but I had a lot of hair as a baby, but she shaved my cousin's head a lot and my brother. Oh. So that was a common thing.
So were the boys in the family?
The boys in the family. Mm. We didn't shave the girls. I think it's both me and my female cousin, we had a lot of hair, so it wasn't really necessary. Like, we didn't have like fuzz. We came out like wig, you know. I don't know if you believe in this. Have you seen it with your nephew or nieces?
Yeah, I actually had not heard about this growing up or within my family. But I did hear about this actually more through my South Asian friends. So my really good friend who's Pakistani, her nieces and nephews, when we were in like high school, they would shave their heads. My Indian friends from high school and college have talked about this. But within my family, yeah, actually, I never knew about this. But maybe it's also, yeah, me and my sister came out with too much hair too. So maybe it just wasn't a practice for us. How about you, Helen?
I don't know about this one, but I remember when I was a teenager and I shaved my legs. Sorry, I have a baby now. And so you're going to hear his baby cooing in the back. But I remember my mom would yell at me saying that it would grow back thicker. So maybe it's the same for baby hair? I don't know.
Yeah.
But like in a more positive way where it's like, yay, shave his head so it grows back thicker. But my baby has very little hair, so we're not going to shave it anytime soon.
Wait, so Helen, you don't believe in this. That's why you're not shaving your baby's head, huh?
I think I've heard that if you shave it, it will grow back more even, because I think a lot of babies, they tend to sleep on certain sides of their head, or they're always tossing and turning, so it creates bald spots on the back of their head. So I could see why some people would want to shave their baby's head so that their hair would grow back more evenly once they stop like moving around so much at night.
Well, according to our findings, there's no concrete proof, so we don't know. But according to Moms Loves Best, when babies are born, their hair is typically thin and light. Even if your peanut has a full head of it, these baby locks change into mature hair during the first year. So when you shave your baby's head, you remove the baby hair and the mature locks will start to appear earlier than they may have left it to Mother Nature. So I mean,
almost like we have two sets of like your baby teeth and your permanent teeth.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Okay, so this next belief is interesting. Putting onions in your socks to cure your cold. Have you ladies heard this one before?
No. I just know about the only time I heard about onions in general with cold is when your mom puts onions around the house. So I have never heard of this one whatsoever.
Yeah, same. Actually, the first time I had heard of using onions as a way to kind of like help with any bacteria was when I heard Helen's story. Although I will say my mom, she does eat onions frequently. And she says because it's not nutritional either. She said something about, I don't know if it's like antibacterial or whatever it is, but onion is one of her kind of like superfoods too. So I don't know if that has anything to do with anything.
Well, this particular belief can be found in Western folklore and also Chinese reflexology. So before the development of the germ theory of disease, which is backed by scientific evidence, people believed that noxious air caused illness. There was a belief that raw onions could purify the air in the room. Maybe that's what my mom believes too, because yes, anytime someone coughed, oh my God, like literally she would be like, I gotta go out. I'm like, oh, what are you doing? Where are you going? Where are you buying? She comes back with a 2-pound bag of onions. I'm like, where do you even get 2 pounds of onions? And it's like, it's not even like individual onions. It's a whole pack. I don't even know. Do grocery stores sell that? I don't know where she gets that from.
Costco?
Yeah, maybe Costco. But there is the belief that when an onion is placed against the skin of the foot and kept in a sock, people thought that onions could cleanse the blood. According to Medical News Today, formerly a purification process that could cure the common cold or flu. And in Chinese reflexology, it is said that people with illness tended to have poorly smelling feet. They also noticed that onions had a strong scent and the ability to remove this foul scent from a person's feet who is suffering from illness. I don't know, that sounds like one nasty thing against one nasty thing, but therefore they believe that the onions removing the smell meant that they were curing the subject of their illness. According to Medical News Today, there is no proven health benefits to this remedy, but it is not known to be harmful, which is also what my mom says to placing onions around the house. That this literally is like the one contentious point with like Philip, because he hates the smell of onions. I personally don't smell it when it's around the house, and I'm just like, oh yeah, just leave it there, it's not harmful. But he's like, I smell it in my bathroom, in the bedroom, in the nursery, it's everywhere. And I'm like, well, you know, she's being really helpful. This is the only thing she wants to do that's a little contentious. Right. And he's like, okay, I guess this is the worst. This is the best worst thing that can happen. But yeah. She always says, like, if it's not harmful, why not just let me do it? It doesn't hurt to try. So.
Right, right.
Yeah. So that's very why we have onions around the house, which everyone makes comments on when they come by. They're like, oh, did you leave this here? Were you eating?
Wait, that's so interesting, though. So you're saying that people with smelly feet, doesn't onions make your feet smell? Like, I'm just like.
I could see, I mean, I've heard of things where people will, they pull toxins out of the foot. Maybe not with onions, but with other things. So it makes sense to me if you're using, if you think, if onion truly has antibacterial qualities, you know, that it could, in your feet, maybe toxins are more sensitive. And we just read from other things that your foot has a lot of like nerve endings and stuff. I feel like I could kind of see.
Oh my God, this is so random. This never happened to me before, but as you're talking about pulling toxins from your feet, this distinct memory just like popped in my brain. I think there's a time when I was a child that my mom and my grandma went to like some TCM thing where they would soak your feet in something and the color changes to show the toxicity or whatever.
Yeah.
And I remember I was like, ew!
Yeah, I think I've seen things like that as well. So interesting. Yeah, a lot of TCM looks at stuff dealing with the feet.
I mean, that's why you see a lot of Bigfoot massages in the Asian Plaza.
So our next superstitious belief is that you cannot or you should not sleep with a mirror facing your bed. Have you ladies heard of this?
Yes, this is something I definitely grew up with. No mirrors facing your bed, because that will give you bad luck and like suck all the energy away from you while you're sleeping. That's what I heard, at least, or that's what I grew up with. But if the mirror is adjacent to your bed, that is more okay, but just not at the bottom of your feet facing you. I don't know if that's more of a feng shui thing or superstition thing, but I've abided by this since like day one, like in my dorm rooms, anywhere I moved to, even without my mom present telling me that, I just always made sure there was no mirror at the foot of my bed.
Oh, interesting. How about you, Mel?
I believe in this because I just think overall it's freaky. Yeah. Like, I would be afraid if I like woke up and I saw my reflection. And because I always think about, remember when you're like a teenager or a little kid and you go to like do your first sleepovers, you're always like, let's do some scary dares. Everyone's like, go to the bed, go to the bathroom and say Bloody Mary or something.
I fucking hated that.
Yeah. So I always think about that. So whenever like, there are moments when I literally would be in the bathroom because my light is automatic. It'll turn off sometimes and I just like, I would scare myself by looking at my own reflection. I'd be like, oh my God. I look scary in the dark. So for me, it's more like a freaky association.
Yeah, yeah. I definitely grew up knowing this as well. And my mom always told me that, you know, you shouldn't have any mirrors by your bed, because if your spirit rises from your body in the middle of the night when you sleep, because that is something that, you know, within certain cultures they believe that it will scare itself if it sees itself. So that's I had not heard about the, you know, other, but it mostly it was just about the idea that your spirit at times when you're sleeping comes out of your body, and that if there is a mirror around, it would get scared if it saw itself. Which is actually in line with some of our findings. According to bettersleep.com, there is a belief that when we sleep, our spirit leaves our body. And when this happens and our spirit sees our reflection in the mirror, it becomes startled and it leads to nightmares in your sleep. So that's one belief. The other, which Helen had mentioned, is that there is also a belief that having a mirror in front of your bed doubles your luck or your misfortune. So depending on what you're experiencing at the moment, it can intensify.
I think I heard about that one too before.
Yeah. And I guess like kind of a similar idea is that the mirror bounces the energy. So bouncing and doubling, virtually interrupting the peacefulness within the bedroom. And that can result in a lot of insomnia and even lead to nightmares. So I don't know. It's interesting. I wonder if what our listeners think, if they've heard of this, if you do your own research, what your findings are, maybe real life experiences that you have to share. Leave them in the comments for us.
Yes, honestly, I feel like all of these superstitions and beliefs, they come from somewhere, right? And it's up to you if you want to live your life believing them or not. Exploring these different beliefs during this episode was a fun way to learn some new things. And also just like a piece, some pieces of our history too, and just feeling a little bit more connected to our, I feel like our like Asian immigrant parents and why they did certain things that seemed a little senseless before. But now it's like, oh, maybe it is connected to some truth. Mm-hmm. Yes. So to all our listeners out there, what's something that you heard growing up that's unique to your culture? And do you know if it is true or if it works? We would love to hear from you. Let us know in the comments of this episode's IG post or in an email.
If you don't already, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and review, and share this episode with your friends. You can also support us through monthly donations at anchor.fm/AsianBossGirl/support or get some merch at AsianBossGirl.myshopify.com.
If you resonated with today's episode, let us know in the comments of our IG post. And if you'd like to put faces to our names, you can find us on YouTube, where we share vlogs, an audience Q&A segment called Dear ABG, and much more. Our handle on both platforms is @AsianBossGirl.
And we have a couple of shout-outs for today's episode. Coming from New Jersey, Raheel wants to send a shout-out to Leon in Tokyo, Japan. Hi, Leon. Congratulations on buying your new place and your promotion. Always love connecting with you, and I enjoy our wonderful conversations. Looking forward to meeting you in person. From Rachel in Berkeley to Kat. Hi, Kat. Congratulations on becoming a new mama and welcoming your baby boy in your new home. I am so grateful for our friendship and our monthly reflection catch-ups, and I'm looking forward to hugging you in person one day soon. And last but definitely not least, from Ari to her big sister, Ariel, in Des Moines, Iowa. Hi, JJ. Congrats on getting married on August 2nd, 2022. I did something right or wrong, winky face, in my past life to deserve you in this one. If you'd like to send a few words of encouragement or a shout out to a friend, check out the link in our show description or our link tree in our link in bio on Instagram and click on shout outs.
Before we end today, we want to let you all know that we've started new mini podcast shows that now release every Tuesday. Tune in to
K-Dreaming with Mel,
Living Well with Janet,
and Spill the Baby Tea with Helen.
Each week we'll release a new episode from one of the shows right here on the Asian Boss Girl feed.
So be sure to tune in to us on Tuesdays and Thursdays from now on.
And last but not least, thank you to our super talented editor, Michelle, for working all her magic on our episodes, including this one.
And with that, we will catch you all on the next episode.
Bye!